from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the program of the year that always, I think, I don't target. Somebody was talking, asking me about that just this week in my seemingly endless rounds of promotion, publicity, that, hey, you got to do it. Somebody was asking me, who do you target your radio program at? And all I could say was people with radios. But this is the one program of the year that I think is more neatly, more finely targeted than that, because this is the program of every year, this particular broadcast, that is targeted at the smarter half of the listening audience. The percentage, and I don't know if it's an exact half, or, you know, I don't know how that falls, but it's the people who remember to turn their clocks ahead. And I know, because in Los Angeles this program airs in the morning, that there's a certain percentage that are going to miss it, because they just, maybe they're not smart. They just have other things on their minds, like not going to see my film. But, speaking of which, now, this is probably the last time I'm going to mention it on this program, and I don't talk about me or my stuff that often. I talk about illnesses I get. By the way, speaking of which, bring your own oxygen on planes from now on, ladies and gentlemen, is my advice. Wow. There's a report. I don't think I brought it today, but I'm going to bring it next week, that reiterates how bad the air is on airplanes these days. I know they got a lot of other fish to fry, but, you know, when your significant other gets a bad case of strep throat just from flying business class, that's not the same as a bad meal. But back to my movie, this movie I wrote and directed, which opened this weekend in Los Angeles and San Francisco. And I know a lot of you are like, hey, we listen to your show. We love the thing. We'll go. We have plans to see that movie. Let me tell you something. In the modern world of 21st century entertainment, an independent, i.e. non-studio film, if it opens one weekend, the odds on it being there next weekend are really, really bad. So I know you've probably been urged to give money to your local station if you like this show, and that's good. That goes to your station, and that's a good thing. But it doesn't come to me. See what I'm saying? So if you like this show and you really want to help me and yourself, because you like I think you'll have a good time at the movie. It's called Teddy Bear's Picnic. Go see it this weekend, because otherwise, you know, think of it as a service you're doing for the people who are slower on the uptake or who missed this show because they didn't set their clocks ahead, because you're giving them a chance to see it next weekend, won't you? Thank you very much. Hello, welcome to the show.
I'm nervous and upset because this girl I've never met I get to meet tonight at 8. I'm taking her for dinner to a charming old cafe, but who can eat tonight at 8? It's early in the morning and our date is not till 8 o'clock tonight, and yet already I can see what a nightmare this whole day will be. I haven't slept a wink, I only think of our approaching tete-a-tete tonight at 8. I feel a combination of depression and elation. What a state to wait till 8. 3 more minutes, 2 more seconds, 10 more hours to go. In spite of what I've written, she may not be very smitten, and my hopes perhaps may all collapse kaput tonight at 8. I wish I knew exactly how I'll act and what will happen when we dine tonight at 8. I know I'll drop the silverware, but will I spill the water or the wine tonight at 8? Tonight I'll walk right up and sit right down beside the smartest girl in town, and then it's anybody's guess. More and more I'm breathing less and less. In my imagination, I can hear our conversation taking shape tonight at 8. I'll sit there saying absolutely nothing, or I'll jabber like an ape tonight at 8. when this is done, if something's ended or begun, and if it goes all right, who knows, I might propose tonight at 8.
All right.
Die. Well, the Lord, before I
That better than a million people cross the New York City bridges every day. The Triborough, the Williamsburg, the Brooklyn Bridge, and there's the great George Washington to send them on their way.
Manhattan, Manhattan, the silk and the satin, you see on Park Avenue there. The uptown, the downtown, the running around town that all the citizens do there.
There is no denying it's exciting, but I know a town that's more inviting. There have been lots of songs written about San Francisco. This is not one of them, nor do they go the way that this goes. I'm not about to tell you of her hills, or her cable cars, or her many thrills. But instead I thought I would take a chance and brief you on how she stacks up in romance. For a walk one day alone, down around the bay, I guess you could say that it was fate. How else could I have met my love on the Golden Gate? She strolled along the bridge and she was the cutest pigeon, gee. Did you never palpitate? Well, you'd have swooned to see her there on the Golden Gate. I looked into her eyes and foggy skies were clear. Just when I thought love was here, what a switch, along came a Cadillac. It stopped and she got him back, alas. And alack, she had a date. I finally found the love I longed for too late. I had no golden, got the gate on the Golden Gate. See if she would reappear, but no such luck, and now it's clear I'm a goner now. Every day I stroll alone down around the bay. I guess I'll simply chalk it up to fate. And that's what happens to you when you don't rate. I had no golden, got the gate on the Golden Gate. I didn't have a penny, so I couldn't ask her out for any coffee. And at the Papagaya Room, I'm telling this to you so you may understand. That's what happens when you don't write. I had no gold and got the gate. I'm a Golden Girl.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this first Daylight Savings Time edition of the show program for the year, except in Arizona, where they don't have Daylight Savings Time and where we're not carried, so it evens out, don't you know? It's all just rocks there, isn't it? Why would you want to? This is Southern California, ladies and gentlemen, and we're busting our buttons because we're going to have probably a couple new cities. Maybe. I mentioned a couple weeks ago that Hollywood, which has so far just been a state of mind, state of mind best exemplified by a comment that was made by Harry Truman in relation to Washington, D.C., but it applies equally well, if not more so, to Hollywood. Harry Truman said, if you want a friend in Washington, get a dog. But Hollywood is going, it bids fair now to be more than a state of mind, as I mentioned. It wants to be a city, a city. I think it wants cityhood. And so does the San Fernando Valley. Now, ladies and gentlemen, it's not too long ago when the San Fernando Valley was bean fields, but it's regressed a little bit since then. And now it wants to be a city. This week there was a meeting. There was a meeting to decide if the city does get to be, and that's an involved process that involves involvement, what would one call it? A group proposing secession, Valley voters organized toward empowerment, this week had a meeting to choose five finalists for the name of the putative new city. And no, putative was not among them. The finalists were Rancho San Fernando, Mission Valley, Valley City. Is that the saddest attempt at a name imaginable? Los Angeles has sprouted with invented neighborhood names over the past 10, 15 years. The neighborhoods put up these street signs, these signs as you're passing through them, that proclaim the names of the except they're not very, most of them are not historic names. They're sort of invented names, and they're invented with all the flair of a developer on his last tract before he runs out of money. City Heights, City View, Valley View, Valley Neighbors, Valley Village, names like that. So Valley City is just right in there, right in the pocket. The winner was San Fernando Valley. Simple, obvious, plain, but interesting. But my favorite of the nominees and the finalists was Camelot for the San Fernando Valley. Camelot, ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen. Camelot. Because, yes, it's a place, it sounds, and it looks and often smells like a place where you would go to buy camels, so there is a logic to it. Sentimentality and tradition. Not sentiment. Sentimentality and tradition were cited as the main reasons for choosing San Fernando Valley. That's what it's known as, said Jerry Hayes of Studio City. We should retain the parts of history we've already established. Yes, historic San Fernando Valley. Established tomorrow. The five names will be submitted to the Local Agency Formation Commission, which is yet to decide whether it will give voters five or three choices for the cityhood election coming up this November. So, big choice. Five name choices or three? I wish I could be a fly on the wall at that meeting. Camelot was hardly a crowd pleaser, even though it made it into the top five. The audience erupted in boos and jeers. Thank God, somebody's... I think it's ridiculous, scoffed Elaine Brown of Sunland. It sounds like the valley is full of Pollyannas. Others thought Camelot had symbolic value, even if it wasn't likely to end up as the final choice. A lot of board members felt initially it was a funny name, said Valley Vote Chairman Richard Close, who supported Camelot as one of his three choices. But it creates an image of a vision for the future, he continued, a new beginning for the San Fernando Valley. What about startup? That was just me talking. I think it won't be the successful name, but it does allow us to talk about an image of the new city. Unquote, Richard Close. but no, you know what. Some were also unhappy with the choice of San Fernando Valley, noting that geographically the valley includes the cities of Burbank, San Fernando, and Calabasas, much of Glendale, and some outer reaches of Sunland Tahunga that consider themselves part of foothills, not the valley. See how they focus on the important stuff. To secessionists, the choice of a name is more important than just the words that will go on the new city's letterhead. It will figure into their political campaign by helping them form a coherent vision of the new city for voters, and by getting them excited about having the chance to name what will be the nation's sixth largest city. Wow. Some names weren't on the official list. Empire Valley and Cinema City. Okay. Camelot, ladies and gentlemen. Let's drive over the hill to sweat our A's off in Camelot, shall we? Now, about the flu. I have despaired of finding an answer to this question of the alleged seasonality of the flu here in the Northern Hemisphere, but today comes some enlightenment from the Southern Hemisphere. Yes, they do have flu season down under, and it's just about to start. Dr. Alan Hampson of the World Health Organization in Melbourne says it's too early to predict whether this year would be a severe season, such as 97 or 98, when many hospitals struggled to cope. Ouch. The Moscow A strain, a very bad strain of the flu, apparently. Oh, I'm still here. Was present last year, but the season had been mild, he says. Many factors, here we go, including the nature of the population, hello, and the severity of the climate, determine the severity of a flu outbreak. The nature of the population. I mean, whether they think Camelot's a good name or not, would that make them? This year, the Australian influenza vaccine will be made up of the Moscow A, New Caledonia A, and Sichuan B viruses. Same as last year. Now, do we know if those were the same that was in this year's flu shot in America? That would be interesting to find out. Somebody, I'm sure, in the audience probably knows. Bill Rawlinson, an associate professor at a Sydney hospital, says mild flu seasons are often followed by severe ones. Isn't that wacky? However, it has been a quiet summer, he says. So they might have flu in the summer? I don't know. It's a bit too early to tell the truth, he says. A spokesman for the Australian Department of Health says it's difficult to predict the severity of the flu season. So that there's a cornucopia of ignorance for you right there. Ladies and gentlemen. Hey, you know, maybe if they secede from Los Angeles, they can secede from the circulation area of the dog trainer, too, because I understand even its absorbency is in question now, which means it's not that good for training dogs, but it's still good for ridicule. Actor Nicolas Cage has purchased a beachfront home in Marina Del Rey for about $2.7 million. The newly built home has four bedrooms and 4.5 bathrooms in about 4,400 square feet. Hey, the fours are wild! It has ocean views from most of the rooms, and it has a rooftop deck. And he's making films, and he's making films, and he's making films. And he was in a film last year. That's all about the house, huh? Oh, he also has homes in Bel Air, New Orleans, and Malibu, where he owns nearly 400 acres of land. He bought an acre of land in Bel Air last December for $6 million. $6 million an acre. Wow. Do you know that? Yep, now you do now. Flea, bassist with the Red Hot Chili Peppers, has sold his home in the Hollywood Hills for slightly more than $1.5 million. The buyer is a bi-coastal chief executive of an independent studio. He admits to be bi-coastal. That's brave. He's keeping his apartment in New York. It's a country English-style home purchased on almost 2 acres behind gates and at the end of a long private drive. Sounds like careers I know about. Built in 1948, the three-bedroom compound includes a main house with panoramic city views and a den/office, a detached recording studio. Those detached recordings are the best. Hiking trails and a pool. Flea, also known as Michael Balzari, is moving to Malibu. He's Australian-born, and he's also known as Michael Balzari. And, I don't know, Richie Sambora's former home, gone on the market. Rick Nelson used to own the property. He spent 2 years redoing the house, did Richie Sambora, who was in some rock band. Oh, Bon Jovi. Okay. I don't think so. I think that's as hot as it gets. Now, ladies and gentlemen, do we have... Yes, we do. Some tales. Now, before that, before tales of airport security, I don't like to brag. I don't like to boast. I like hot butter on my morning toast, but I... Thank you very much. Rapper's Delight, 1979. But there is some news today about the wonderful digital wonderland to come, and some of it is in the trade. So would you do me a favor? Would you let me read the trades for you? Thank you very much. This is from PC Magazine, from the Inside Track column. I'll read it for you. And then something great from Advertising Age. It's a big trades day here in the show program. But first, on HDTV. No, you know what? First this. I know. I'm making it up as I go along. From Advertising Age, first. More than 4 years after Frito-Lay launched its fat-free Wow chips to great expectations, the now niche brand is part of a reverse test market to determine consumer reaction to the olean-based snacks being yanked off store shelves. Though they didn't say it in so many words, it seems the handwriting is on the wall for Wow, says one retail executive. In a market where Wow has been pulled off the shelves. According to Frito-Lay spokeswoman, Lynn Markley, the test was launched to determine consumer preference for low or no-fat snacks, including determining if the absence of Wow would increase sales of its once powerful Baked Lay's brand. She said the company has no intention of pulling Wow completely. Wow sales were over $150 million last year. It remains a stable and profitable business for her, she said, but a stable niche business was never what Wow was intended to be. The much-anticipated launch of the brand in March 1998 was expected to be a blockbuster. That lofty estimate seemed conservative by the standards of Procter & Gamble, which spent $1 billion over more than a quarter century on research and development for Olestra, later renamed Olean, including more than a decade of attempts to win Food and Drug Administration approval. That's the fat-free fat. Olean. Last June, Procter & Gamble wrote off its investment and in February sold the Cincinnati plant that makes Olean. Wow was a disappointment right out of the gate. Even in its launch year, Wow was blamed for dragging down volume expectations for Frito-Lay North America from 7 to 8% to 4 to 5% and tempering profits. That's despite $35 million in advertising and an extensive sampling program intended to counteract consumers' growing skepticism regarding the taste of low-fat products. The aggressive marketing effort included a quickly developed follow-up campaign to the initial "One Taste and You'll Be a Believer" tagline, offering the additional incentive, "Bet you can't taste the difference or it's free." Oh, if you can taste the difference and you don't like it, then it's free. That's a good incentive. Still, sales didn't improve. Procter & Gamble's own Olean-based snack, Pringles Fat Free, sales have been declining ever since 1998. The reason in part for Wow's disappointing performance, in part, is timing, according to Ken Harris, a consultant. Frito-Lay's launch was delayed due to Procter & Gamble's trouble getting Olean approved and opposition from the Center for Science and the Public Interest, a required package warning, quote, "This product contains Olestra, which may cause abdominal cramping and loose stools," unquote, didn't help. Thank you. couldn't hurt. Now, from PC Magazine. By John Dvorak. For some odd reason, I feel disgusted and at the same time vindicated by the most recent fiasco regarding high-definition television. I have been skeptical of this rollout and urging caution since it was first proposed as an analog system requiring expensive circuits to work. It appears that the new copy protection schemes being dreamed up by Hollywood will make every single high-definition and digital television set sold to date obsolete. Buyers of new sets are not being told about this situation in a dubious attempt to dump very expensive inventory. What happened was that the Hollywood folks who were just freaked over the possibility will be copying HDTV movies, hey, copy mine, have promoted copy protection that requires the decode circuit to be built into the display, not the set-top box. This requires the set-top box to send a signal to a connector that new digital sets will have. If you're thinking of buying an HDTV, don't, unless it has this connector and circuit, whenever they are finalized. This copy protection mechanism will be used for certain broadcasts, too, since there's been a lot of talk about copy protecting other transmissions. The concept is that when copy protection is put within the circuitry of the display, you can't decode something with a set-top box and then grab the signal as it comes out of the box before it gets to the screen. Meanwhile, the electronics industry is going to eat crow if the current HDTV sets turn out to be white elephants. I see no evidence that this mess will be resolved without a lot of burned consumers. All the Hollywood studios are belatedly demanding the new system. I suppose an expensive retrofit could be developed, but it probably won't be. Nothing is designed these days for fixing or retrofitting. And I'm guessing that those expensive set-top boxes will also have to be replaced. According to most sources, all the latest schemes allow copy-protected broadcasts and movies to be viewed on the old high-definition sets, but they will fall back to lower resolution. Anyone even thinking of getting HDTV before this issue is completely resolved is just throwing money away. Funny how your local newspaper or TV station hasn't been covering this consumer issue, isn't it? Unquote from PC Magazine. Funny. It has been covered here, hasn't it? Funny. The things you discover when I read the trades for you. And now, as if that's not enough confirmation, ladies and gentlemen, from the BBC World Service in England, Barry Fox of New Scientist magazine on the rollout of digital television in Britain.
You could get a signal which just almost got through any kind of bad weather and any kind of bad circumstances. But you need a couple of things there. You need to give each channel a lot of digital bits. You need to allocate a lot of information to each channel. And that means that you can't have as many channels. Now, if you try and get 6 or 7 channels, then you do get that kind of blur, particularly on fast-moving objects. So that's the trade-off. And what you're seeing there, if you see poor quality pictures, you're actually seeing evidence of greed on the part of the broadcaster, trying to get too many channels into the limited space.
Do you think that's happened in Britain? I mean, Britain has tried to promote, the British government has tried to promote digital TV. It wants to be a sort of world leader in it. And yet you have comments, a recent newspaper article by a filmmaker who said, and I quote, "Digital pictures are frankly sub VHS standard, watery and with no depth." Sounds as if they got the balance wrong in Britain.
Yes, I think they have. I think, frankly, they have tried to squeeze too many channels into limited airspace.
Isn't it another case, though, where we have a piece of new technology, and really it should be up to the consumer to decide at what pace they take it up? And actually the government poking its nose in and saying, as they have in Britain, that conventional TV services will be turned off within 4 or 5 years, isn't that completely the wrong way to go about it?
Absolutely 100% the wrong way.
Sounds like greed is coming in again.
Oh, it is greed. And greed is all right as long as you sort of you organise it. But this has been the most disorganised shambles in the history of broadcasting. There is nobody running the show. What we are seeing is headless chickens running a rudderless ship.
To get the new signals, you require an extra box on every single television, in the sense that even if a household perhaps has one digital box, any other televisions in a kitchen or a bedroom would simply be unable to be used because the analog signal would have been switched off.
Oh, yes, it would. They will all go dark. And one thing that you haven't mentioned and most people forget, and in fact I think the government still seems to have forgotten, is video recorders. I mean, you're going to need a box tacked on to every video recorder in this country. And you still cannot go out today and buy a video recorder that has a digital tuner built into it.
Would it be more sensible to carry on the analog signals indefinitely and use the spare spectrum simply to add on a much more limited number of digital channels, but ones which gave you a variety of benefits, for example, a clearer picture or a widescreen picture?
Exactly so. Parallel running is the way to go. But there had actually been no discernible strategy at all. So to expect there to be a sensible strategy like the one you outline, which is to run the services analog and digital in parallel, is asking too much. And it's a nice comparison with what happened with black and white, the move from black and white to colour. Nobody was saying, listen, you've got to change to colour. The government, the BBC, just were saying, look, colour looks pretty good. Why don't you have it? If you want it, it's there. And of course, what happened was people went for colour, and eventually there were so few people watching old-fashioned black and white that the transmitters could be switched off. It's all tied up with profits. They want us to buy new equipment. But the public is now remarkably resistant to new technology. Gone are the days when people will buy some new electronic gizmo or trinket simply because it is new.
Greed afoot in England, imagine. Remarkably resistant. Did you hear those R's rolling the death knell for digital television? So, ladies and gentlemen, though, I hate to say I told you so. Now, an exclusive feature of this broadcast.
We're so sorry.
The apologies of the week. Not a lot of apologies this week. Not a big week for apologizing. I don't know why. Warner Brothers is making amends for Sandra Bullock's snub of firefighters who dropped by while she was filming in Brooklyn to present her with a September 11th fundraising T-shirt. At the time, a Bullock representative said, quote, "It's not like they'd made an appointment," unquote. Now the firefighters have been invited to visit the actress at another location where she's filming a picture with Hugh Grant. So there's that. The Irish edition of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire TV game show is a center of a controversy. They're kind of apologizing, I guess. All four potential answers to a question on last week's show were incorrect. The bankers of the program blamed a computer problem. The company's managing director, Ms. Joan Egan, said the program was driven by two computers. That's a good idea. One which lists questions and the other the amounts of money won. And if the two were activated at the precise same split second and they crossed each other, it sometimes throws the computer selecting the questions out. A stack of thoroughly checked questions were ready for each show, but when the computers crossed each other, as in this instance, a question was selected for the contestant not from the stack, but from a database which had not been thoroughly checked. The problem had arisen twice on last Sunday's show. It was extraordinary, she admitted. The question, who starred with Cliff Richard in Summer Holiday? Okay. Not too trivial. The four possible answers given were Lulu, Adrian Costa, Barbara Windsor, or Anita Harris. None of them were right. The correct answers could have been Una Stubbs or Laurie Peters. Who knew? You can't blame the computer for that, ladies and gentlemen. That's a who knew right there. And one non-apology. Michigan National Republican Committeeman Chuck Yob. Yes, sir. A Yob. Mr. Yob said he will not resign over his remark that women running for statewide elective office are best suited for Secretary of State because, quote, they like that kind of work. Two Republican candidates for Michigan governor called for Yob to step down. Yob rejected their suggestions. Under no circumstances will I resign my position. I was elected by our party's grassroots. He said Secretary of State is a good job for women. Has a nice, real nice place on the ticket for a woman. They like that kind of work. Most county clerks across the state, which is a jump to Secretary of State, are women, and they have the experience. He later said he did not intend to imply that women were qualified or interested in only certain types of elected offices. So he clarified he did not apologize. Meanwhile, ladies and gentlemen, you know what's going on in the Middle East. It's explosive and getting, well, maybe better, maybe worse. Colin Powell has been sent this week since Anthony General Zinni was not up to the job. And Dick Cheney's visit last month didn't really work out as planned. Not quite as unsuccessful as the introduction of WoW, but close. And the renewal of wide open hostilities in the Middle East has resulted in something we haven't seen for a while. The anchors of all three network news broadcasts are broadcasting now from the Middle East.
Okay. Possible opener for tonight. The streets of Nablus exploded with... Excuse me, Shalil.
Yes, sir. We setting up the camera here?
No, not yet. I was just thinking... You're from here.
I'm from Amman.
Good enough. Now, how would you assess the mood around here?
In Nablus, angry, very angry.
Okay, thank you, sir. The streets of Nablus exploded tonight with a volcanic anger that burned deep and strong.
Look out!
Phew. That was close.
Stupid cab drivers here. Nobody on this side of the Green Line knows how to...
The streets of Nablus exploded tonight with danger. And this reporter's still got the smell of danger in his nostrils. His anger spilled over into...
Brother Rather.
Thomas.
Ah.
Shall I shoot him?
No, thank you, sir. I've tried it.
Unbelievable, isn't it?
This place, the face of war, it's never very pretty on the ground.
Unbelievable that we're all here. When'd you get in?
Well, sir, we knew we had to get to the Middle East in force last Sunday.
Uh-huh.
But...
Well, of course, we got here. Say, a week ago last Thursday.
Yes, sir, I actually did know that. Mm. The main reason our fearless leader approved our trip with a full crew...
You got the hair, lady?
We got whatever we need. Was because you were here, so... I owe you one.
Hey, listen. NBC only approved me coming with the understanding that I'd...
Do stuff for cable?
Guest on an all-anchor edition of Weakest Link when I get back.
Amazing.
Yep.
Well, they haven't called this hombre. This wouldn't be the first time I'd had a face full of rats.
Really? Uh-huh. You know, it's not like Fear Factor. I mean, that I turned down.
When I first hit Afghanistan in the mid-80s, the rats owned the caves. Uh-huh. Tell you, Hoss, that's a three jockey short night you got there.
I saw Brother Jennings yesterday in Ramada.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
What's the mood there, you think?
Tense. Mm. Almost everywhere you go, you see... A new level of tension. Yesterday, my sound man called me a gray-haired bitch.
Woo-hoo. Shalil wouldn't do that, would you, boss?
No, sir.
But no, Daniel, it's unbelievable we're all here. I mean, we haven't done this since... Wow, since Princess Diana?
No, sir, I do believe, and check me on this, that that was way back in Oklahoma City.
We haven't all been on assignment together since the Murrah Building?
Believe it. Book it. Buffett and Bevelet. Bedevil and...
Okay, I believe it. Wow, that's a long, long time.
Mm-hmm. Excuse me, what was that second item there?
Long.
Okay, thank you, sir. Just double-checking that.
Long.
Yes, sir, Brother Brokaw. This is a jagged little slice of history we're living through here.
Mm.
Razor thin.
Uh-huh.
More dangerous than a drunken bungee jump. And just maybe... It's the end of an era.
You know, I think it's the beginning of an end of an era.
Or is it the end of the beginning?
Look out!
Wow. What was that?
Let me find out here. Shalil, what was that?
Sounded like a flat tire. Stupid drivers here.
So, what do you think, Daniel? Are we dinosaurs striding across the landscape for the last time?
I don't know, Hoss. I think I'm second date hopeful here, but to quote Mark Twain, the death notice for the network evening news broadcast has been, at the least, woefully premature.
Well,
you know, they keep saying cable's going to eat our lunch and spit out the seeds. Uh-huh. But, sir, please, when a big story like this one breaks and the world threatens to get just a little bit more dangerous, who are they going to send over here? Chris Matthews and Greta Von What's-Your-Face?
No, I agree. I think the longer this goes on, the more we prove our relevancy.
Our what?
Our usefulness, our value to the companies. I mean, I hate to say it, but you know, we're better off in times of crisis.
No, I think that's in our DNA. That's why, much as I like my anchor chair and I'm frankly repelled at the idea of anyone else sitting in it, I have to get back in the dust and the danger, scuff my shoe leather, soil my dockers.
Not literally.
No, sir, not since the rats. Also, let's be interstate straight here. We've got added value in our coverage in my outfit.
How so, Daniel?
Following the orders of Chairman Mel, our corporate stablemates at MTV are going to be repurposing our footage with new narration.
Who's doing the narration?
A couple of folks named Lil' Kim and Jay-Z. No, sir, I don't think that... Hey, why don't the three of us get together to commemorate this momentous occasion?
Yeah, well, I ran into Brother Jennings a couple of times since we arrived with Operation Cover Middies for NBC. And both times he was sticking very close to the lads from the CBC.
Our Canadian brothers, really?
Yeah, I think he's even wearing a maple leaf lapel pin.
You said lapel pin?
I did.
And
leaf.
Roger. Well, sir, you out here to do a stand-up?
Walk and talk, but maybe we should have dinner tonight. My driver tells me there's a pretty good sushi place in Oromala.
Brother Boko, I was a green behind the wet spot rookie when Ed Burroughs said something characteristically straight and true. Never eat raw food east of Suez. Let me see you in the hotel bar.
All right, good deal, Daniel. You be careful out there.
You too, sir. Thank you. What was that, Shalil?
That I think was gunshots.
The streets of Nablus exploded with gunfire again tonight, and the air was dark with danger.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, one more piece from Peter Cook and Dudley Moore. Couldn't find it in time for last week's broadcast, but as part of a tribute to Dudley Moore, wouldn't be complete without at least one more broadcast of this little piece right here.
Is that you, Roger?
Yes, Father.
A cup of tea in here for you, if you'd like one.
It's very kind of you, sir, but I've just come in from Raga and I'm a bit grubby. I think I ought to go and have a shower first, sir.
Well, pour me a cup. There's a good chap, would you?
Certainly, sir. Yes, of course.
Thank you. How was school today?
Oh, much as usual, thank you, sir, but I caught someone having a crafty smoke behind the wooden buildings. Had to give him rather a ticking off. Such a filthy habit, you know, sir.
It's a filthy habit, Roger. Yes.
There we are, sir. Now, if you'll excuse me.
Roger?
Yes, sir?
Sit down. Roger, your mother and I were having a bit of a chat the other day, and she thought it might be a good idea if I was to have a bit of a chat with you.
A bit of a chat, sir?
A bit of a chat, yes, Roger, just... a bit of a chat.
What about, sir?
Well, there's nothing to be worried about, Roger. It's just that, well, to be perfectly frank, how old are you?
Well, to be perfectly frank, sir, I'm coming up to 18.
Just coming up to 18?
Well, on the verge.
On the verge of 18. Yes, well, I thought it might be a good idea to have a bit of a chat now, because I remember from my own experience that it was when I was just, you know, coming up to 18.
On the verge.
On the verge of it. That I first began to take a serious interest in the... In the opposite number. Now, I don't know, Roger, if you know anything about the method whereby you came to be brought about.
Well, sir, some of the boys at school say very filthy things about it, sir.
This is what I was worried about, and this is why I thought I'd have a bit of a chat and explain absolutely frankly and openly the method whereby you and everybody in this world came to be. Roger, in order for you to be brought about, it was necessary for your mother and I to do something. In particular, it was necessary for your mother to sit on a chair. To sit on a chair which I had recently vacated and which was still warm from my body. And then something very mysterious, rather wonderful and beautiful happened. And sure enough, 4 years later, you were born. Now, there's nothing unhealthy about this, Roger. There's nothing unnatural. It's a beautiful thing in the right hands, and there's no need to think less of your mother because of it. She had to do it, she did it, and here you are.
Well, sir, it's very kind of you to tell me. One thing actually slightly alarms me. I was sitting in this very chair yesterday, sir, and I vacated it, and the cat sat on it while it was still warm. And should we have it destroyed?
It's a lovely chair, Roger.
Oh, cat, sir.
Destroy it? Oh, no, Roger, you don't understand. This thing of which I speak can only happen between two people who are married. And you're not married.
Not yet anyway, sir.
Not to the cat in any case. Well, Roger, now you have this knowledge about chairs and warmth, I hope you'll use it wisely.
Sir.
And take no notice of your school friends or what Uncle Bertie may say.
Dirty Uncle Bertie, they call him.
Dirty Uncle Bertie, and they're right, Roger. Your Uncle Bertie is a dirty, dirty man. He's been living with us now for 40 years, and it does seem a day too much. You know, if it hadn't been for your mother, Roger, I don't know where we'd have been. She's the only person who can really cope with Uncle Bertie. She's the only one who can really deal with him. I don't know if you realize this, Roger, but your mother even has to sleep in the same bed as Uncle Bertie to prevent him getting up to anything in the night. If only there were more people like your mother, Roger.
Well, I'm very pleased that you told me this, sir, because, as I say, I'm very glad I don't have to believe all those filthy things that the boys at school say. And only yesterday, Uncle Bertie said to me...
Take no notice of Uncle Bertie, Roger. He's a sick, sick man, and we should feel sorry for him.
Well, I'll try, sir. Well, thank you, sir. I wonder if I should take a cup of tea up to Mother while it's still...
I wouldn't do that, Roger. She's upstairs at the moment, coping with Uncle Bertie.
Poor Uncle Bertie.
Poor Uncle Bertie.
Uh-oh. Come on.
Couple more notes on the technology front, ladies and gentlemen. Celine Dion's latest CD release has generated heated discussions on internet message boards because it won't play on computer CD drives. It has come embedded with Key 2 audio copy protection in Germany and several other European countries. It's clearly stated on the front of the booklet, according to Sony, and on the back of the jewel box, that the CD will not play on a PC or a Mac. The disc itself bears the same warning. Should the consumer try to play Celine Dion's CD on a PC or a Macintosh, the computer likely will crash. That may just be a taste thing. No, it's not. And Yahoo now tells its email users it has reset all their personal info divulging marketing preferences to yes. And AT&T WorldNet has begun including advertisements and email messages sent by full paying subscribers who use the email interface, not just the cheapy subscribers. So, goodbye online. That's what that tells us. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this. With that good sound and those good vibes in our ears, that concludes this edition of Le Show. The program comes... what am I trying to tell you? The program will return next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the American Forces Network, on shortwave at WBCQ The Planet at 7.415 megahertz, and on your computer around the world whenever you want it at two locations, www.harryshearer.com and www.kcrw.com. And it'll be just like you're going to see my movie before it goes away, if you would agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much, uh-huh? The Sea Crane Company is proud to support Le Show, offering long-range radios, antennas, and more for over 25 years. The Sea Crane Radio Light and Science Catalog is available online at ccradio.com or by calling 800-522-8863. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. The show internet services by Steve Mack. Reminding you to have a bit of a chat with your loved ones this weekend, I'm Harry Shearer. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.